Next Chapter Podcasts.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday, dear Josh Adam Myers, who is me. Happy birthday to me. It's my birthday, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. I am 39 years old today. I think one of the first times I jerked off, or scrooched, really, it wasn't jerking off, it was just the pressure, not actual grip of the penis, was to one of her music videos. What's the one where she's like laying in the bed with the bullfighter? Remember that video?
She brought out a sex book where it was like
I remember that. Oh, yeah, Big Daddy Kane?
The book was like $120, and like Vanilla Ice was in it.
Big Daddy Kane, Vanilla Ice, Naomi Campbell. Trust I know this shit,
yeah,
dude.
So it was very hard back in the day to get porn, and my brother bought this book, and this book was in our house. And I jerked off to that book many times.
Your dad, your brother bought the sex book.
Yeah, he's still got it, yeah. The pages didn't hold together well, not because of the cum or anything, but the spine on the book wasn't very durable.
Yeah, she didn't really, the paper was a good quality, the spine.
It was like photo quality paper.
Yeah.
And then it was just this fucking, this book that was like a legal pad.
That song? That's I Am the Resurrection. What album is it off of? Oh, well, it's off of the Stone Roses 1989 debut record, The Stone Roses. And it's number 498 out of 500 on The 500 with Josh Adam Myers. I'm your host, Josh Adam Myers. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to the only podcast where each week me and my guests go through Rolling Stone magazine's top 500 albums list from 500 down to numero uno. And guys, we're down to the final 498th episodes. There's only 497 left after this because our final episode date is May 31st, 2028, where we wrap it up with the number one record, which I'm hoping will either be Paul McCartney as my guest, Oprah, or Boutros-Ghali. One of them might be dead. I have no idea by that time. One of them might be dead already by now. So to follow this podcast, guys, please make sure you pay for your Spotify, your Apple Music, your Amazon Music, whichever way you stream music. Please make sure you listen to these records beforehand. Just listen to it once. Put it on in your car when you're driving to work. Put it on while you're out at the gym. Listen to these records so you kind of have an idea what's going on. Either way, I don't think it makes a difference. You really don't need to listen to these records. You should, but you don't need to, because the discussions that we're having are incredible. And I love it because people have been reaching out nonstop about how much they enjoy this. So thank you to everybody that has been tuning in for the first two episodes and tuned into this one. Guys, this means the world to me that you're even listening, because I would do this shit solo deep. I would do this just for myself. I was actually going to do this solo deep. I was going to just listen to 500 records over 500 days. And then when I started to do that and post about it on social media, it just so happens today's guest reached out to me and said, dude, this is one of my favorite records of all time. And then I was like, there's the podcast. That's what we're going to do. I'm going to sit down with a comic or an actor or whoever, and we are going to break this shit down. So if you haven't told anybody about this podcast, tell your friends. Tell your friends to join the movement. Make sure everybody rates, reviews, subscribes, everything to the 500, because I love you guys so much, and you're just making me so happy to know that you're out there listening to it. This week's guest is the man that literally gave me the idea for this podcast. One of the greatest working comics today, Mr. Jim Jeffries. You guys know Jim from his Comedy Central show, The Jim Jeffries Show. You know him from his FX show, Legit. Or maybe you know him from one of his incredibly hilarious hour specials on HBO or Netflix. He's got a new special currently streaming on Netflix called This Is Me Now. Make sure you guys go and check it out. Jim is one of my favorite comics. He's a close friend of mine. October 2014 is when I met him. I remember that because we have a mutual friend, Forrest Shaw. And Forrest is a great comic, very good friend of mine. And I needed a headliner for the goddamn Comedy Jam. It was a good lineup, but we had done like 2 months of straight Burr. And then we did Adam Devine. And then I was like, God, I need a big name. Who can I ask? And Forrest was like, you know who would be really good for the jam? Would be Jim. Jim used to sing opera in when he was a kid, in the teenage years. And I was like, oh, please, God, make this happen. And then, dude, not only did Forrest make it happen, but Jim crushed. Jim did, for I think the first time he did the jam, Jim did Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in due with a little help from my friends. And his story, the song was great. Annihilated the song. But his fucking story was the best because he put on this like $6,000 jacket that he bought from John Varvatos. And the only reason he bought it was he was at this special event at the John Varvatos store on Melrose and San Vicente or Robertson. And as he's trying the jacket on and like, I think he's trying the jacket on and he's looking at it almost in like in a ridiculous way. Like, look at this fucking jacket. That's a horrible accent. I'm just going to talk like a normal human being. Jim was like, ugh, look at this jacket, and showed it to his friend and be like, how ridiculous it is. And at that exact moment, Ringo Starr walks by and goes, you look good in that jacket. And then Jim thought to himself, well, now I have to buy it, because if a Beatle tells you you look good in something, you fucking buy it. British people do music better. They do. It's proven. We'll see it throughout the list. I bet you if we go through this list and we found out how many people are American, how many people are British, I would believe that 60% are going to be British. I have no idea if this math is right, but I got to believe that because they just constantly make great music. I love Jim Jeffries and I love this episode, man. He is a real fan of the Stone Roses. So make sure you guys go on Netflix right now and check out Jim's new 1 hour special. It's hysterical. Also, don't forget to listen to the end of the podcast, because at the end of each podcast of the 500, we spotlight a new artist that was directly influenced by the band and album that we just talked about. So stay tuned to the end of the episode, guys, where we will be playing that new music for you. And like I said earlier, rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500. Please tell two friends. I'm listening to a great podcast. It's about the 500 greatest albums of all time. You should join up. Great comics each week, breaking down these records, getting questions asked around the meanings of the songs. So here we go with number 498 out of 500 with the Stone Roses, Stone Roses. Oh, Jim Jeffries, oh, Jim Jeffries. I am so fucking happy to finally sit down with you for this because, to be honest, Jim, you're the reason that I'm doing this and I turned this into a podcast.
Why?
Because when I was going to just do it on my own and do a 500 records over 500 days.
Right.
When I posted about the Stone Roses, you sent me that DM that was like, this is one of my favorite records of all time.
It'd be in my top five albums of all time, easy.
I think this works perfectly with you being a fan because, you know, when we were hanging out the other day, you told me some stories. So before we get into all of that, mm-hmm. What year were you born? You're born in
1977.
77. What did you grow up listening to?
I grew up listening to like Australian pub rock mostly.
Was that Silverchair?
Well, no, Silverchair was way after. I remember seeing Silverchair in a shopping mall with their parents.
Really?
They were 14 or something when that album came out.
Like, Danny was adorable, I'm not going to lie.
They were out like shopping with their mum and dad. Like, I remember they couldn't tour until they finished high school.
Uh-huh.
But Frog Stomp was such a good album.
So good.
And then, yeah, you know, I think he got arthritis afterwards and started dating Nelly and Bruglia.
Wait, is arthritis a side project he was in? Or is he yeah.
I think it might take a lot to make Nelly and Bruglia come, and that eventually your fingers go. I don't know. But I don't know, but like
I'm already torn. Please lay off of me.
I'm already
You've broken my thing. Right.
She nicked that song.
She did. Did she really?
Yeah, it's a song from like, say, I'm going to say like a Scandinavian band or some shit, but it's like, it's not even, it's not like she nicked the riff. She nicked the whole thing.
But yeah, but she was adorable.
I saw her in Soho House in London about sort of 6 or 7 years, making out with Harry Styles. I'm like, that girl still got it. Because he was about 4. You know what I mean? She was like 40-something, but she's got it, man.
Do you remember Frente?
Accidentally careless street where friends and strangers sometimes meet. I love that song. That's a happy song. I have a theory that Accidentally Kelly Street is actually a song about rehab.
Really?
Listen to the lyrics again. Here's a chair and here's a table. Here's a mirror. With the music's playing. A black and white movie. The TV's there. That's what it's for. And something about like, perhaps this sense of something will... now we've all learned to share. Listen to the lyrics. If you break the lyrics down, it sounds like someone who's just come out of therapy and then they're sitting in a fucking home.
I think that's every song. Every song has
all the dishes are done by sunset and da 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 da.
I mean, if you go, you could do any Beatles song.
Accidentally Kelly Street, where friends and strangers sometimes meet. Accidentally Kelly Street, I never thought my life would be so sweet.
Peter, play a little bit of that right now.
Accidentally.
That's about rehab, everybody. What were this little
snippet?
I
believe it's about rehab, but read the lyrics afterwards. Okay. Read the lyrics. And if you read it like a poem, you go, that's a person in rehab.
That's every song.
No,
dude.
This
I'm
one's like
you.
Crazy like that.
Okay. So you grew up listening, you said Australian
pub rock. So, well, you know, it sort of goes back to like NXS, was like a pub band, and then Men at Work, and then, you know, obviously AC/DC, but more like Midnight Oil. And then UMI was a big band for me.
Everyone called
the Whitlams.
Everyone that you've named, I've heard of, and I didn't realize that was like pub rock. I just would have thought that would have been just pop.
Well, it's like you couldn't just become like a person on the radio in Australia. There wasn't the population. You had to tour. You had to do live gigs, and so everyone just did the pub scene. The Highway to Hell pub,
yeah,
is in the end of the Canning Freeway or Canning Highway.
It's a pub?
Well, there's a pub at the end. I can't remember the name of the pub, but maybe the Raffles or the Rafferty or something like that.
Okay.
But there's a pub that's in Perth, which was notorious for being like that Blues Brothers thing where bottles were thrown.
Yeah, people, yeah.
And that was the end of the Canning Highway. And the Canning Highway is the highway to hell where they wrote the song going there because they were going to the hellish gig.
Oh, I thought that this is what they did was they just named pubs after famous songs. So.
No. This was long
so this is the Can't Get You Out of My Head, Manic Manny Petty Spa. It's Kylie Minogue came in here once.
No, there was a band called the Whitlams that I enjoyed a lot. And there was UMI, which was like, I was a big fan of UMI.
Yeah.
Powderfinger.
Don't know them.
Powderfinger's good, man.
I just want to ask, because I know you mentioned it.
Crowded House. I don't give a fuck what anyone says.
I love Crowded House. Don't Dream It's Over.
Split Ends.
Don't know that one.
Split Ends is Crowded House before Crowded House.
Okay, well, I know
so
Don't
it was Neil
Dream
Finn's,
It's Over.
Neil Finn and Tim Finn's band, then Tim Finn left, and then Neil Finn made Crowded House, but still the same members.
The Finns, yeah.
And the Australians tried to steal it. It's really a New Zealand band, but like, you know, so New Zealanders wrote the songs and all that stuff, but we had an Australian drummer, I think, so that makes it an Australian band.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I
saw the last ever Crowded House concert.
Okay.
They did in front of the Sydney Opera House. There's like 80,000 people showed up. And they thought like 40,000 were going to show up as a free gig. And the place went fucking mad. And UMI was opening for them. Powderfinger was the band before that. And I think that was 20-something years ago. And they just redid that concert in front of the steps. But their drummer committed suicide. Paul Hester, who was very heavily into... the comedy community in Australia, and he fucking hung himself from a tree in a park in Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
Told his kids, he's like, I'm going for a walk. And he was a very funny guy in that whole depression and comedy thing, but he had like comedy shows and everything. It was very sad.
Well, I don't know how we're able to continue the podcast on this set.
God bless Paul Hester, man. Paul Hester. Guys, if you're listening.
Hashtag Paul Hester. All right, so let me ask you this. So what were the...
the big obsession bands. Like, you know, like if I had my Iron Maiden phase, my Guns N' Roses phase, like...
I had a Guns N' Roses phase.
Okay.
I had a Cure phase. I've had a Beatles phase my whole life.
Everybody does. I think that's everybody.
And my parents weren't Beatles fans. It was just something that I sort of discovered. My brothers didn't listen to them or anything like that. My brother's 8 years older than me. And so it was 1986 or 7, uh-huh. The CD player really hit in Australia. And then Dire Straits, Men in Arms, Brothers in Arms came out. And it was sounded so good on a digital recording.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Want my... And so he would just play that intro all the time. And so it was just like...
Cue that, Peter.
He would listen to cheesy shit like that in the Joshua Tree album.
That's not cheesy.
No, but it was of its time, this whole, like, there was, like, sort of douchey fratty. But my brother was a douchey fratty guy.
Okay.
And he listened to those two albums, Joshua Tree and Brothers in Arms. Over it. And so I had a healthy disdain for both those bands. And I now would like U2 in a way, but it took me 20 years before I could listen to them in any
way. I get it. I feel like they're older U2, like the Joshua Tree and the stuff.
My middle brother listened to fucking Madonna.
I like Madonna.
He was mad for Madonna. Heterosexual, mad for Madonna. Odd.
I mean, I think one of the first times I jerked off, or scrooched really, it wasn't jerking off, it was just the pressure, not actual grip of the penis, was to one of her music videos. What's the one where she's like laying in the bed with the bullfighter? Remember that video?
She brought out that sex book where it was like...
I remember that. Oh, yeah, Big Daddy
Kane? The book was like $120 and like Vanilla Ice was in it.
Big Daddy Kane, Vanilla Ice, Naomi Campbell. Trust I know this shit,
yeah,
dude.
So it was very hard back in the day to get porn, and my brother bought this book, and this book was in our house. And I jerked off to that book very many times.
Your brother bought the sex book.
Yeah, he's still got it, yeah. The pages didn't hold together well, not because of the cum or anything, but the spine on the book wasn't very durable.
Yeah, she didn't really... The paper was a good quality, the spine...
It was like photo really quality bad. Paper.
Yeah.
And then it was just this fucking... this book that was like a legal pad at the end with a metal cover.
Fuck that,
and it was
dude.
Just called Sex...
Cyndi Lauper's was made perfectly. You could still holds up Cyndi Lauper's sex book.
No, I wonder if there's a good copy of the Madonna sex book that's in mint condition, because I feel like they're all matted.
Tweet at us or tag us if anybody has one and is willing to donate it to the 500.
Well, he still has it. It's just not in good condition.
Yeah, but we don't want one that's been cum on. No. I want a freshie.
No, but one that Jim Jefferies wanked to, there's got to be some market for that. Like, I'm not that arrogant, but I feel like there's someone, one of my fans...
I love that. All right, so how do you feel like your music appreciation and what you listen to has grown from that time growing up until?
Well, no,
like
I feel like it grew for many, many years, and then it stunted in sort of the late 90s. Everything stops when you have kids as well. As soon as you have a child, whatever you were into, fashion or clothing or whatever, everything stops and you just go,
you're just
boom.
Stuck in
and
that.
And so I still have, I'm an Oasis fan. I still have a big hangover from them. And I still buy, I still think greatness is upon them. One of them's going to do something phenomenal. And I still buy the solo albums from both artists, which is weird because I love the Beatles so much. But Paul McCartney can bring out every fucking album in the world. I'm still not going to buy it.
Yeah,
the argument that he's got to write something good on there. It's got to be something amazing. The guy's got the skills, but you just go, and in the end,
I feel like everything that Paul has released recently is just too, like, woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a doop, scoop, and then I give you a Sunday.
The problem is he obviously falls in love far too easily.
Too easily.
Every song is like, this is the one, this is the person I've been waiting for. I'm so happy that you've come into my life.
Next track is like, whoops, I fucked up. Yeah. I really meant you.
I've lost a lot of money, but this new bird's the one.
She's
right?
And, so it's like, and she doesn't have a leg.
When he was with Heather Mills, and he
is that the legless?
Song, the legless one. And he was like, he goes, I'm pretty sure this has never happened to me before. I found you, and now I'm sure. That was like last time. It was chaos and something in the backyard. It was like, mm-hmm. Cool. And then I was thinking, if you were Paul McCartney's kids, you go, well, what about mum? You're always going on about mum.
Yeah, Linda was great.
You're always going on. You had mum in the fucking band. You had mum in the band. You were releasing fucking frozen meals with her. And now all of a sudden, fucking, you know, one knee.
All right. So you're saying, so it sounds like you're pretty much like me. Is that like I'm stuck within the same 100 records?
Yeah, we went and saw The Killers together.
Which was great.
The Killers is one of the last bands that I really, really got into. You know, but even then, it's like. No, I'd still buy any Killers album that comes out.
Well, I've seen, like, if we're just going by what you sang at the jam, at the goddamn comedy jam, it's been two Beatles songs, you've done a Killers song, what else have I missed?
I did an Amy Winehouse song.
You did do Amy Winehouse, yeah, but
I did the Zutons
version, which is far better.
Which is from me living in Britain in that era. And it's all about, when are you taking drugs? When are you making out with girls? Everything's about... Music's a memory that you have from, I remember when I fucked this person, or I remember when I went on a date with this person. And when you're older and you got kids, you don't want to... Music's something that you use as a memory of when you were having fun in your life.
Yes.
When you stop having fun, you don't want to go, oh, that's when I was miserable.
Yep.
Oh, that's when I had my hemorrhoid surgery. I remember when that song came out. Music's from a carefree time in your life.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
You talk about Silverchair. I remember smoking pot by the rope swing in Germantown, Maryland.
Yeah.
I mean, but then when I started getting into, like, the Radiohead, that's when, like, the seriousness of life kind of started coming on to me. So tell me about your first experience, because that brings us to what our album is. And our album is number 498 out of 500, okay? It is the Stone Roses.
It was ranked 498?
Ranked 498.
From who?
From the Rolling Stone magazine,
but not from them.
No,
I never get into the top 100 comedians.
No, which is bullshit.
How many comedians do you need?
Don't worry about why it's Rolling Stone. Could be NME. I don't give a fuck.
I like the NME.
Because, of course you do, because we're bringing them up a lot later. So this is number 498 out of 500.
I once presented an award show for the NME, and they never paid me. And I still like them.
Well, I get it.
They said they were going to give me a nice gift. Still waiting, NME. I did that for fucking free, you cunts.
I want everybody to...
It's where Elton John and Bernie Taupin met each other in the fucking classified section in the back.
Really?
Everyone thinks there's some romantic fucking story about those two. Like, they were like, I like music, you like music too. I like to write lyrics, I like to write songs. Maybe we should get together. Right? No, that never happened. He just was like, Elton John just advertised in the back of the NME and just went, I need a lyricist. And then he was like, probably Tim Rice wrote to him. I don't know who the fuck else wrote to him.
Sure.
But that's how that magical relationship happened. Now they're making a movie about that.
All right, here we go. So it's the 1998 debut album from the Stone Roses called The Stone Roses. All tracks written by Ian Brown and John Squire, with Ian on vocals, John on guitars, mm-hmm. Manny on bass, Rennie on drums.
Rennie
and the
on
album
drums.
Was produced by John Leckie, and John Leckie went on to produce Muse, Origin of Symmetry, and Radiohead The Bends, two of my favorite records. So tell me about the first time you heard this, how you got into the Stone Roses,
I was on a date with a guy.
Where are you? This is in England or?
In Australia. I may have been like 18. This is the first time I ever heard about the band. And I may have been like 18 or something like that. And she was heavily into music. She was probably 17 or 18. Well, you know, whatever. We were similar age. And we went to a bar, and she had a group of friends that we met up with, and they had all gone and seen the Stone Roses. And at that stage, I had a lot of hair, and I had a sort of a mop top hairdo. And one of the girls went, I look like Ian Brown. Now, I obviously don't look like Ian Brown at all. Maybe more when I was 18. And so one of her friends was fucking besotted with me because she'd just come from the concert. She was probably on drugs. And so I was like, wow, that's all right. Man, I look like some rock star.
What are the drugs that the people are doing back then? Is it like
speed probably.
Speed? Okay.
So ecstasy as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Chemical stuff. We can't ship things in. It has to be done in a lab.
I get it.
Because back then, we're an island.
It's just so...
Everything comes in a fucking, in a condom up someone's arsehole.
Right. I got 50 more pounds of that crystal. That's the worst. Crystal meth.
So I remember I went and had a look at the album in a record store afterwards, and then I thought, I'll listen to it. And then I thought, it's all right. And then I moved to Britain a few years later to try to pursue comedy. That album was played at every party that I went to, every single time I went to a party. And then years later, I moved to Manchester for a few years. And then obviously, by that stage, I was an Oasis fan. And then every interview I saw Liam or Noel do, they always referred back to the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
So I got into it quite late, that album.
So let me ask you a question, because you mentioned that's being played.
But they're already broken up by the time I was a fan.
So you're saying you're getting into them around 1990?
Yeah, 2000, really.
Oh,
2000,
wow. Yeah. Oh, so late. So 11 years after the album
came
out.
But I heard about it years earlier.
And that's what's funny with me, is I'm basically the same thing, whereas like I had my fascination in 99 into the 2000s with like Brit Rock, where I started getting really into Radiohead and Travis and Gomez and The Verve. And then...
Well, I've seen Ian Brown in concert several times, and then it was basically, when you saw Ian Brown in concert, you're basically watching the Stone Roses because you do all the songs. It wasn't like there was any harmonies that needed to be fucking matched up or anything like that.
So when you're first hearing this, like, what is sticking out? I remember we have the track list, but do you remember any of the particular songs that...
It was Waterfall was the first song that I heard, and that was like, I saw an interview and Ringo Starr said it was the best album of the last 20 years or something. And then Ringo Starr was like, he's like, Waterfall is a good song. You should listen to Waterfall. And so that was where it all started. It was Ringo Starr said something, and I thought, oh, I'll give this band another listen. And then it was just very good drug music, you know, at the height.
Yeah, it is. It's me and one of my producers, David, think it's perfect driving. Perfect driving. High. I'm always high. So if being high and
also
driving.
There was the movie 24 Hour Party People, where they sort
that.
Of referenced it very slightly about everything that happened at the Hacienda in Manchester. And the Hacienda was like the pill-popping nightclub that everyone went to, but they didn't make any money because no one was buying drinks. And then now the Hacienda apartments in Manchester.
Uh-huh.
People take photos just out the front, just to, you know. So it was just a warehouse district in Manchester. And incidentally, the Manchester Comedy Store is probably 200 meters from the Hacienda, from where the Hacienda was.
Mm-hmm.
And so being there, you'd meet like Northern Comics and all the, they'll be like, oh, this is where the Hacienda was, man. I fucking pill fucking off my head, Stone Roses, get fucking mashed up, you know.
I love that accent. So that's the Manchester accent?
Yeah.
Okay, that's perfect.
And so
well, it's like a
skeezy fucking one.
You're gonna
but then you've got like Liverpool's very close and more in it, right?
It's got more phlegm.
Fucking hell! Oh, you know, go over to Manchester. You know, go fucking watch the Stone Roses.
From fucking
you know?
Manchester, don't fucking talk to me.
Fucking shite. They had this romance about the late 90s and the Stone Roses, the early 90s and the Stone Roses, and getting fucked up and going. And so that was the same. If you watch like that Supersonic documentary.
With
Oasis, where they were performing under the like that those little rooms. That was all where Oasis were just formed, and they used to just play by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all just after the Stone Roses. Now you know the Stone Roses got back together. Because,
they did in 2013.
And they got back together, and they never sold a stadium before, and then all of a sudden they were a stadium act because guys like me had become fans of them since the breakup. And they got back together, I think it was because Ian Brown's... It was always Brown's and Squire couldn't get along.
It's always the two best. It's always the two most important people in every band that don't get along.
And it was one of their mums died. It was at a funeral. And that's how everything gets together, because you can have all the problems in the world with a person, but if you were kids with someone and their mum dies, you still go to the funeral.
Because they actually met in, it was either middle or grade school, and one of them stopped the other one or helped somebody out, somebody was getting beat up, and then they beat somebody else up, and they became friends. That's what I read.
Yeah, and
so
Squires was a very unique guitarist, one of those guys where you knew it was him playing. Which is quite...
Yeah, well, it's, you know, listening to the record, it's like, from not knowing anything about him, like, the solos are either these really chunky guitar strokes, which we're going to talk about when we get to the track
little,
list.
Little plucky things.
Or they're little plucky, but it's... But,
but
it's
not
like
acoustic plucky, but little note. Doom, boom, boom, boom.
Which song is that?
Waterfall.
Peter, play a little bit of the beginning. So when you first hearing this, like, why is it sticking out to you? Like, what is it that's drawing you to this record? What is it that drew you? Because, like, I talked to Forrest.
I don't know. It's the same thing. It's probably drugs and alcohol, and it's probably I made out on a beanbag with some girl, and I had a good night, and then that sticks with you. It's everything. Everything in life is association.
Sure.
Everything's like, I had a good day that day, and that was what was playing, and now I'm happy, and I had a bad day that day, and, you know. It's like, I hate the Kings of Leon, because I used to have this girlfriend that I dated, and every time we got into a fight and we all got belligerent and angry with each other.
She'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you.
Oh, these sexes.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, she'd go into the other room and she'd play Kings of Leon. And so that was...
I want your leg in.
Yeah. So that was the soundtrack to fights.
Oh, I hate... Just what a horrible one. Just, hell no, hell.
There was some song that went, hey, yeah. I don't know what that song was, but
you just are saying to her, like, where do you want to go to eat tonight? Hell, you gotta use somebody.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jim.
So right, I've always hated Kings of Leon for that reason.
Fuck
but
that.
I assume the Stone Roses was something at a happy period in my life.
I like that. And you know what's funny is when I was talking to our friend Forrest Shaw about this, and he says that you guys get into discussions about this record of why it's one of the greatest ones ever.
It's like they bring... Okay, so you can have like the greatest hits of the Stone Roses now. There's only two albums. And
speaking of that, I don't want to get to that later, but do you like Second Coming as much as you like the first one?
You only need the greatest hits because it's got like 16 tracks on it. You're cutting out all this shit. So the only thing that wasn't on the first album that was a single that was released that, you know, that just didn't make it onto it was Sally Cinnamon.
Yes, which was one of the first songs that
they
wrote.
Right, which should have been on the first album. Mm-hmm. And cut some of the fat off and put that in there. But, like, all in all, there's very few albums where there's, like, seven or eight tracks where you go, killer, 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 killer.
There's eight and singles that were released from this.
Whenever I listen to this album, I always do it on LP, so I never jump forward or back in any tracks.
Sure. No, I get it. So, all right, so let's say this. So what would be your favorite song on this record? What's the one that you feel you're the most connected to?
I Want to Be Adored or She Bangs the Drums or I Am the Resurrection. Like, it's sort of, you know why I like I Am the Resurrection? I don't think there's been a, like, the bit at the end is a bit wank where they just have a fucking jam session.
Don't like that part either.
Yeah. But I like the fact that I don't know of another song that takes maybe 3 minutes before you hit the chorus.
So you're right about that.
If you hear it for the first time,
no, you're right.
You're like, I guess this is the song.
Here,
this is the song. But before they kick into the real fucking fist pumping bit,
yes,
and before the fist pumping bit, you're already like, this is a good song.
Well, if you go, it pounds like if 40 for almost like the first beginning. Just
doom, doom,
play
boom,
it for
boom,
me. Play boom, the beginning,
boom,
Peter.
Boom,
doom, 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 doom. This is a very, I don't know if you know this, if you really read these lyrics, this is a very anti-religious record.
Very anti-religious, but it's also open to interpretation, like when you're angry or someone pisses you off in your life. You know, don't waste your words, they don't mean anything from you, I don't care where you've been or what you've planned to do.
Look at you. You know this shit, dude. Yeah, someone's been doing the research on this.
I just know this album.
All right, well, let's jump into... All right, well, let's do this before I get back, because I want to get into the track list where we break down the songs and ask you some questions. What is the song, if you wanted to make this a perfect album, going by that release, the one that we're saying that starts with I Want to Be Adored and ends with Fool's Gold, we're doing the U.S. release of 1999, what song would you leave off this record?
Fool's Gold was never on the U.K. release.
It wasn't on the UK, but it's on the B-sides, but we're going by the USA one.
Okay,
So what song would we leave off that record to make it a perfect album? Which one do you think is the worst out of it? I already know mine.
Bye Bye Bad Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or Don't Stop.
Don't Stop is garbage, too.
Yeah,
Don't Stop. I'd say, you know what? I'm going to tell you for you because...
But Elephant Stone's one of those ones that it's like, it's all right, but it's overplayed or people think it's a better song than it is.
Well, I would leave off Fool's Gold because I think
Fool's
Gold... Fool's
Gold is the one when you're chatting to some mank and
fuck
it's like...
that?
They're like, fucking fool's gold, man.
No, it sounds like stereo MCs. I want to get myself connected right in.
There's very little to no synthesizer used on the album, and it feels like it's almost like a dance track.
I just didn't like it. I felt like after I Am the Resurrection, you stop. No, but after I Am the Resurrection, you gotta stop that record. It ended perfectly with I Am the Resurrection. I Am the Resurrection fucking pounds, man.
Yeah, but that's the problem is that the Fool's Gold was such a big song in Britain after that album came out. It was probably just a single or something, but the thing about this album as well, for whatever, 498 or whatever the fuck it is on your
498. Yeah. Respect the list, Jim.
There's no video clips.
They made music videos.
No, there's no music.
Yes, they did.
No.
If you go on...
They're all shitty things. They're all appropriated stuff where Ian Brown's just wearing a fucking t-shirt with dollar notes around his fucking neck.
He's such a badass. All right, let's get into the track listing. All right, so we open up the album with I Want to Be Adored. It's a great way to come in. It's a slow build into the song. Peter, do me a favor. Play minute 3, second 36 for the breakdown of I Want to Be Adored. This is my favorite part. It's the part where it goes, I wanna be a... It's fucking dope, dude. It builds. It's sick. The song is about... I found this out. It's a meal coupe to fans of the band who criticized the band for signing to a major label, with Ian Brown effectively claiming that the group did so in order to reach a wider audience via the resources of that new label. We were talking about the lyrics earlier. I don't have to sell my soul. It's already in me. I don't have to sell my soul.
Sell my soul.
It's already in me.
When you come and see me at a theater, I used to have that track in my sort of warm-up music just because I like the song. And then I thought maybe it's sending a message that I want the audience to adore me or something, so I got rid of it.
Which leads to my question. How do you feel about the idea of selling out? And have you felt at any point in your career...
Oh, I try to sell out everywhere I go. Okay. It's the whole idea of booking a theater.
Sure, because you want to reach
sell
a wider
out,
audience.
Might as well be back in a comedy club.
So in that idea of like when people shit on people that sell out, it's like that whole clip from that Metallica documentary.
I get told all the time that I used to be a better comic. I used to be maybe different when I was younger, but I was different in every way when I was younger, and you know, am I better now, worse now? It's open to interpretation. I get different people coming to see me or what have you. This idea of selling out, there's nothing more pretentious than a person who's like, this band was good before, blah,
hate
blah, blah,
that
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, well, there's a couple bands that I'm like that with, but at the same time
there's a few bands, but it's like you have to change direction so heavily that, you know, it's like, okay, so UB40 used to be like this political band from Britain who sang about politics. The form UB40 was the unemployment form in Britain. Mm-hmm. That's why they were named that. And then they do like an Elvis cover and a fucking cover of Red, Red Wine by Neil Diamond.
And that's how they became Brett Kavanaugh's favorite band.
And then they were just like, fuck it, we'll just fucking make some money. So that's the example of a band that really did sell out.
But what I'm saying is like the idea, are there people that you have like, even comics or politicians,
no,
whatever,
think,
that
think,
the idea
think,
of...
I don't think comics ever really sell out. I think you're either what you were when you started or not. You know, it's not like you can write a routine and go, this will be a catchy one that everyone will enjoy. I'm always surprised personally by stand-up routines that I do on my specials. I always go, that one's the good one, that one's the good one, that one's the good one. And then the bit that goes viral or the bit that everyone remembers is never the one that I pick. When I did the gun control thing, I never had an image that would be the one that everyone would latch onto.
Really?
No, I never remember thinking, this, I'm doing something here, this is the bit. And now, you know, I'm doing political fucking comedy shows and I never talked about politics before.
This is the one. Yeah, We're talking 60 million views. Yeah,
I never saw that. I always thought my best routine was the one about the muscular dystrophy brothel and all that stuff. I still do.
Fuck yeah, dude. All right, let's move on.
So under She Bangs the Drums. Now, She Bangs the Drums, I was delighted to see about 10 years ago.
Play the intro, Peter.
Well, I was about 10 years ago when I bought Guitar Hero and it had this song on it. And before that moment, I thought that no one in America knew this band existed. And then I was like, oh, that's cool. They have a Stone Roses song on Guitar Hero.
So one of those things where it's like this record and this song, it's when you're talking about, which we're going to bring up later, is the Manchester scene in, mm-hmm. in England, where they're talking about how this band came from the rave and electronic dance scene, and it's kind of like this, their interpretation of mixing all that stuff into rock.
It's more than that. This was the band that brought back guitar music, because before this band, it was just people taking pills and listening to DJs.
So what are you talking about, like New Order? Is New Order before that? Well, no. What about bands like, what's that fucking band? Joy Division, right? That's right around the same time.
It's the same sort of, there's an era. No, but that wasn't, no, because that the Smiths didn't mesh that with that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that brought all the kids out that were listening to the techno in back to guitar bands. And then when Oasis came in, it was just guitar bands again. We're back to rock right away.
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand like how pivotal a moment that was, because everyone was... I remember just being in the 90s and just getting into cars and people putting techno on their fucking stereo. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And we didn't have any bands that were coming out. And so the Stone Roses were a nice little bridge between the two.
Do you think... So then if you go through... the lyrics, because of what you're saying, it actually makes sense.
Well,
because,
none of the lyrics mean if anything
to anybody. No, this actually means something. So my favorite lyric is, play the 30 seconds into the song, Peter. That's a very bold statement. Kiss
lyric
my ass.
Is on this album?
You had your time. My time is now. Get the fuck out of here. Do you think that was their statement to those techno people?
I think there was, but I think we could overread these things. I think people often read too much into art.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts. And new episodes come out every Monday.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
No, I understand. But all right, so then let me ask you this, though. Do you feel like that statement rings true? Is there a changing of the guards in
there was definitely a changing of the guards, yeah. But I don't know if they were as aware of it as we are now in hindsight.
This is a song that I used to dance to at this like underground music party in Baltimore called Tax Low. And it's literally, ladies and gentlemen, about a guy that just wants to fuck a female drummer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Then coming to your favorite song, Jiminy, Waterfall. Peter, play 3 minutes and 30 seconds into the song for that guitar breakdown. So basically this song is about leaving home and becoming an adult outside of your parents' control, realizing that you can conquer the world. Here's some sample lyrics. Now you're at the wheel. Tell me how does it feel? So good to have equalized, to lift up the lids of your eyes. So I feel it's like finally outside of the world. You know that you are now being awakened. So to be the water.
Lift up the lids of your eyes.
Now, I think he was never a great singer, but
no, but his lyrics are good because what he's basically saying there is just go with the flow, be the water flow.
Ian Brown was just like a fucking, just like a supremely cool guy.
Dude, there's something that I remember I heard by Ian Brown a long time ago. I can't remember what it was, and I can't find it on Spotify, but I think it was on one of the first records he did solo.
You know the song Fear he does, right? So he has a song called Fear.
Okay.
For everything a reason, forgive everything and remember. Finally, everything spells out is an acronym for fear, right? All the lyrics that he does.
I see what he's doing.
You know what I mean? But there's a lot of like fucking drug addled British people who think it's a spiritual journey when they listen to that song.
For each of all, for every man a religion, find everybody and we. Forget everything and remember for everything a reason.
Fuck everything asshole, really.
And really.
Fun erections, ass rectum. And then you go into Don't Stop after Waterfall, which I think is terrible.
It's just backwards.
Now what we're doing is, and what I think is actually, this is the tale of two records. I actually feel that the record gets better in the second half, in the later half of it. I do like I Want to Be Adored, but then we get into Bye Bye Bad Man, which is funny because these are the heaviest lyrics on top of such an upbeat song. Bye Bye Bad Man centers upon the riots in Paris in May 1968, and the lemon slice on the album cover is inspired by these riots, which focuses upon the philosophy of situationalism, which is what we're about to talk about. Additionally, the protests attempted to suppress the alleged overbearing establishment of the period. During these riots, lemons were used to counteract the tear gas used by riot police, and Brown and Squire noted this and wrote a song in recognition of the bravery, togetherness of the protesters in face of violence. Now, you can hear that in
Squire
the lyrics.
Painted all the albums?
Say what?
It's his artwork, Squire's artwork on the covers.
Yeah, but it's basically a Jackson Pollock.
Jackson Pollock, but
rip
he still
off,
does
yeah,
it.
For sure. Now, play Bye Bye Bad Man, where just a little bit, Peter. Here are some of the lyrics. Soak me to the skin. You would drown me in your sea. Submission ends and I begin. Choke me, smoke the air in the citrus sucking skin. I don't care. You're not all there. Here he comes. Got no questions. Got no love. I'm throwing stones at you. I want you black and blue. I'm going to make you bleed. Going to bring you down to your knees. I mean, that is the most upbeat way
to throw stones at a woman?
He's talking about making you bleed. He's talking about, you know, I want you black and blue, which is basically the protesters facing off with the riot gear. Now, to get into this, situationalism, which is what they were talking about, is what this was based on. It's a branch of psychology based on the belief that a person's behavior is largely determined by their environment or context. So let me ask you a question. Do you think this is true? Did you find that your early life environment made you who you are today? Is that what makes you?
Of course it did, yeah.
So where do you think, like, a lot of the – how did that, you know, where you grew up affect how you think and how you are now?
No, I don't think – the location being Australia did much, but I think definitely your childhood and how you were parented and what have you affects you. I am a believer that you're 70% what you are the second you come out of the womb, and that's just who you are. And
sure.
I believe that 30% is crucial, and you can decide whether that 70% is going to be an angry 70% or a happy 70%.
Okay.
But you can't teach people you can't teach the motivation as such. You know, like people who are super, super competitive, like Kobe Bryant or something like that, who they're just all the time. I don't have that in me, this super competitive. But that's a gene that's born into you.
I believe that too.
You can't produce that. Jealousy is something that you're either a super jealous person or you're not, and you can try to deal with that through life. But anger is something that's definitely put into you. You know what I mean? Whether you're angry all the time or, you know, and then, or whether you're supremely happy constantly.
So how do you feel that your childhood has gotten you to where you are now then?
I think I definitely had a chip on my shoulder growing up, and I still have that chip on my shoulder now. I think, sadly, a lot of any success that I've had or anything that I've achieved has... I have a big... Well, you can, fuck you, Gene. I have a big proving people wrong, Gene. You know what I mean? And I think that's not inherently in people.
That's I have the same thing. I do that because of my dad.
Yeah.
I do the same thing where it's like I just wanted to prove to him that everything I said as a kid.
Same thing with my mother. I just that I'm not an idiot and I can, you know.
Oh my God! No wonder we're fucking friends.
Yeah. But that's that whole thing that you have to, and then you realize later on in life that the only person that truly cares about most of it is you.
Yeah.
When you do something or you have a success in your life and you're like, there, see? Most people are pretty happy for you or most people don't care.
No, I believe. I believe the same thing.
And you think that these people who are sitting at home angry and then you're like, well, I proved it wrong to them. And there are those people. Of course, there are those people. But they don't matter.
All right. Moving on. Elizabeth, my dear, basically a ripoff of Scarborough Fair. Just play the beginning, Peter.
Yeah, but this is just connection of tissue now.
Yeah, of course. But it's you know, they're basically just saying fuck the royalty. It's to me, it was, you know, I've heard it before. Kind of heard it before. Song for my sugar spun sister. Now, this song is about loving someone to death. And they aren't reciprocating. Now, it's funny because if you listen to the song, it could be a hooker because the lyrics, it says, I got her for 15 or more. So he's saying he might have this prostitute for 15. And
for
15, so
15 minutes or $15?
It could be either or.
Yeah.
Could be either or. He doesn't know. That's what I'm saying. Ian left it to our imagination.
Right.
And he says that this is, he has the most impossible shit. He has to do the most impossible shit to make this girl happy. Now, play the chorus at 56 seconds into the song, Peter. Don't fuck this up, buddy. Until the sky turns green and the grass is several shades of blue. Until the sky turns green. Every member of parliament trips on glue. It takes all these things and all that time till my sugar-spun sister's happy with this love of mine. What's the most ridiculous shit you've ever done to impress somebody, girl or person you're just trying to hang out with?
Most ridiculous thing I've ever done to impress a girl? Probably high school going. The reason I'm here doing any of it is I went into school musicals to try to meet girls.
So you were doing what?
At school, when you're 14, 15, and you're not good at sport,
You're
not terribly good looking, and how do you meet girls? Where do you meet them? There's no bars. There's no anything. You just meet the girls at school, and they're sitting with a group who's cooler than you.
Sure.
How do you separate them from the pack and have a bit of a time where you can shine?
Yeah.
And what was the one activity in school where 80% of the people who joined up were women?
It's theater, dude. It's theater, always theater. Arsenic and Old Lace,
So I did school musicals for that exact reason. And also because you could acting kiss people.
Yes, but also they're the horniest out of everybody because we're so connected through the shitty acting that we're doing.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you're a guy with some fucking emotions or some shit.
Yeah, dude.
But that's my theory on why actors are short. Because they're all good looking, but they're all short.
Sure.
It's not inherently... Actors,
yeah. Tom Cruise
aren't
like
short.
Tom Cruise like 3 inches
tall. You
don't
need to be short to be a good actor. Comics aren't short. Like we're not John Cleese and all these people. Will Ferrell is a big man.
Those are.
Do you want to know why? Because we have a skill that can be impressive.
Sure.
To people.
No, I get it.
Actors are short because if you're short, you can't be great at sport. You can be, but that's an exception to the rule, right? You're probably not great at sport. You're probably not meeting women because women want to date taller guys.
Yeah.
Right. You better be able to do a fucking Shakespearean sonnet real fucking good, right, in a class. And that's why they do it in school. It's the same reason that all Formula One drivers are little fellas, right? It's not because these cars, that they need to lose 20 pounds for the car to be able to drive.
Do a little bit faster.
That's
it's like shaving off all your hair to swim.
Because what happened was when they were all racing go-karts when they were kids, the weight did matter. And so the bigger kids gave up. Right,
fuck
because
yeah,
I can do other fucking things. And the little guys were like, this is what I'm excelling at. So they stuck with it. right? And then they became professional drivers. And so if you picked up your first bit of pussy when you were 15, reading a fucking Shakespearean play or some shit,
yeah.
all of a sudden you're Richard Dreyfuss, right? You're fucking Richard fucking
Dreyfuss. Yeah, but Richard Dreyfuss in the 70s is sexy as fuck, bro.
How else are you
Don't shit on RD.
How else are you meeting girls if not to do it this way?
Well, I'll back you up on your claim because when I was in high school...
Tom Brady doesn't need to learn how to act...
I know.
Michael Jordan didn't need to learn how to act.
I know.
He never got the bug. He never got the bug, right? The bug is, I want to meet girls.
Fuck
That's
yeah.
the fucking bug, right?
Yeah.
You never meet someone like, I'm extremely good at basketball, extremely good, but this other bug has gotten me so much
yeah.
that I have to give up basketball because I found a calling.
Yeah.
No, that's a lot of rubbish.
I believe it. I believe you're right. I mean, I'm going to back up your claim. The earliest way I used to get girls to let me touch their boobs was to pick up my guitar and play Stone Temple Pilot songs. So I'd be like, come over after school. We'll smoke this little sprinkle of weed that I've saved. And then, you know, time to
I never thought the comedy thing. So I went and studied musical theater at university. And they could put me as the romantic lead. In a part, right?
Uh-huh.
I would be the fucking, meant to be the debonair fucking dashing guy.
Okay.
And I was still, if I was delivering a fucking romantic scene, people were still laughing. And so I was like, all right, I'm just funny. I couldn't fight it anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just do funny roles from here on in. I didn't even want it. I gave up being a leading man in any way.
Yeah. No, I get it, dude.
And then the good thing about comedy is, like, good-looking people can be romantic leads, and funny people can still be romantic comedy leads. Comedy can still be romantic. Like, they talk about, like, Ricky Gervais being a romantic lead now in movies,
yeah.
and you're like, really? That's what...
Well, but you know, a lot of women say they're into funny guys.
That's
what they are.
Exactly,
but,
exactly.
I mean...
But would we do anything without girls? Would we do anything? Would we try to... If it was just a world of men... And we're all heterosexual men.
Yeah.
Would anyone try to achieve anything?
If we didn't have women to
We'd
kind
have
of just...
buildings just falling down and we'd all be rolling in our own shit. That no one would be having any careers.
Just farting all over the place.
Who are we trying to impress? It's like now that I have money, people go, oh, the only reason that women like you is because of your money. And I go, that's the only reason I made it. The only reason I fucking made it. I was happy in a one-bedroom apartment. I was fine.
Yeah.
I walk through my house now. I don't use half the space.
No. I mean, there's still this passion to want to go out and perform.
No, there's none of that. There's none of that.
You don't have... Come on. So you're just like, all right.
Like Kavanaugh, the only reason he wants to be on the Supreme Court
is just to fuck
is to impress
yeah.
women.
Yeah.
And it's backfired on him horribly.
Horribly. Horribly. All right, moving on. Made of Stone, which was my first. So let me tell you. So when I first got into this record, I was going through this whole British, fuck. It was everything I was talking about. Gomez and Travis and fucking
Travis.
I love Travis, dude.
You like
Travis?
I was living in the height of Travis. Travis. Everything in there. Every Travis lyric, and I like Travis.
Every day I wake up. Alone because
everything's like, and so we sing.
All I want to do is rock
and sing. So he just says the same word, and,
yeah.
And so if you turn,
yeah. Oh god, dude.
turn.
Oh, like drifting
over water. Have a drift, I'm drifting. Yeah. I'm gonna drift some more. I'm still drifting now. I might sing.
All I wanna
do is
rock. That's all I wanna do is rock.
Yeah, his lyric sheets must just read like shit.
But Made of Stone. So I got this record because we're gonna talk about this later. About all these people think that this is one of the greatest British rock albums of all time. And so I was like, well, I gotta get it because I believe anything that NME or any of these music magazines come out with that's have British in the title. And I was like, I got the record, and I didn't like it at all. The only song that stuck out to me was Made of Stone, and I feel like this is probably the most poppiest one. And then you...
Play us a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes I fantasize when the streets are cold and lonely
and the cars below me, burn below me. Don't these times? It's just
it is
shit.
Poppy, yeah, it is poppy.
And then I want you to get to. We're gonna go to minute 2:36, so we can hear this. This is my favorite part of the song. Here's the guitar solo. This is what's
yeah,
funny.
It is a good song.
This is a fucking. That's the most poppiest song on the record. And then you find out that Made of Stone is actually pretty sad because they're obsessed. You were saying that that Squire is obsessed with Jackson Pollock and he's obsessed with his death. This song is about the car crash and of Jackson Pollock. So now, if you listen to those lyrics, it's about death. So it's about death and the loneliness surrounding it. And then I got to ask this question, like, you know. How does that make you feel? Like, what do you think happens to us after we die?
Nothing happens. No, nothing happens when you die. You just die.
Don't you want to believe that there's another life?
No, it terrifies me if there was...
Not heaven, that you start over.
No. What do you want to start over for? What do you need to keep living forever for?
You don't want to come back as like a rabbit?
No. No, and if I do come back, I don't want to remember it. And if I've just come back now, I didn't remember it. So what's the point of it to begin with? What's the point of having these other lives if you don't fucking remember them?
But I think that they've...
It's like you're saying we'd be recycled? Like they've
no,
mashed
no,
us
no,
up
no, 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 no. So
you leave
so
as
you...
a bottle, you come back as a plastic plate?
So kind of, but not really. So I'm going by the Buddhist view. So it's saying that you know, so whatever you did in the life prior to this, this is what is dictating the life that you're in now.
Sure.
So the mistakes that you made.
But you don't remember it. I don't remember it. Why am I paying for the shitty things I did in the life that I don't remember?
How are you paying? You were sitting in a beautiful life. You got 9 Coke bottles unopened over there.
Yeah.
Most people only have one.
Yeah, that's true.
You've got 9. So you did something good in your previous life.
So all these people having shitty lives, I should spit on them for the shitty things they did in their previous life.
That's true. Yeah. 100%. I don't
know. And isn't this perpetual that if you have a bad life and then you get given another bad life, then another bad life, that each life, like a shitty Russian doll of bad lives, keeps going? How do you turn it around into
because,
a good life?
But then eventually you're going to figure it out. That's what I'm saying, is that eventually you'll reach that level of enlightenment and then that'll be it. And then you just go, boop. And then you're just fucking, you're in a John Squire song.
When does it end? When does it end?
It doesn't. Trust me. I want it to every day, but it doesn't. All right, moving on. Now we're getting to my favorite fucking song on this goddamn record.
Really?
Shoot You Down. How do you not think that's the best song on the record? Because here's why. All right, this was my favorite. Just play it from the beginning for a little bit, Peter. Just get that little... That
it's
is
massage music, man.
No, massage music?
Yeah, yeah.
I love how you said it, though. It's massage. You fucking class that shit up. This song is literally, it's about the tale of a man who has grown tired of a relationship. He sees the demise of it. He's bitter, and he just wish he would have turned this girl down at the beginning. So if you listen to these lyrics, you know it, you show it, and the time has come to shoot you down.
That's what I've always said about there's no time machines, because there's been several relationships in my life that if there was a time machine, old Jim would have jumped over the fence. Jim never comes back.
No.
Future Jim's never come back.
Nope.
Unless we're in the timeline where the time machine's about to be built. But I don't believe we can never do time travel.
We can't do time travel.
Yeah.
But all you can do is learn from those mistakes. So that's what that's
what Ian
is.
Another life as a snail.
But that's what
that treats other snails better than all the other snails.
So now you're this, but no, your snail last life was good. So what? Because he broke up with the girl.
How much can a snail fuck up?
This is why this song is so fucking dope. Because this is the biggest fuck you to a girl. The way he's saying, he's like, "I'd love to do it, and you know, you always had it coming," and then. This is it. It's just the most smoothest, most laid-back way to say fuck you with the drums, the guitar. The best part, go to a minute 37, Peter.
I never wanted the love that you showed me. It started to show me. And how I wish I'd said no too slow. I couldn't take that.
This is the fucking shit, dude. Like, he's literally like, I never wanted the love that you showed me. It started to choke me, and how I wish I'd said no too slow. I couldn't take that. I mean, he's like, I want you to know, like, I fucking do not want to be with you. Okay. That's why I love this song, because it's so beautiful and such a fucked up thing to say to somebody. So now I got to ask you this question. Can you describe a moment where you let a relationship either with a friend or a lover drag on longer than you wanted, and deep down you knew the whole time it was a bad decision?
All of them drag on longer than they should have. There's very few that you go in a relationship where you go, oh, I ended that one a bit quick.
Sure.
Maybe you do that. yes, there has been relationships in my life that I let people mistreat me too long. And the problem is, what happens with that is, and I found this in a relationship fairly recently, but then I become a bit of a bastard at the end. And so someone's mistreating you and they're not doing great, and then you act like a bastard, and then the memory is you being a bastard.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like, then you become no better than them. And then everybody, their friends think you're an asshole. Your friends think they're an asshole. And then it's just a fucking mess.
Sure.
So I would never want to name anybody in particular, but it is a weird thing in life where it's like no one comes out of war with no injuries. You know what I mean?
That's a great way to say it. I hate that we have to put relationships and call it a war, but in a sense, towards the end, it's just the most.
And at the end, you go, well, our two countries have found peace. We can show up at a party and not punch each other. But
there's an accord.
But all the fucking lives that were lost along the way.
So, well, you know, one of my exes, and it's like, I remember at the time that we ended it, this is a years ago relationship. I mean, it was the most horrible ending. And then it's just time passes and then you could see. But the thing is, even though she ended it in such a bad way, we were done a year prior. I was just with her because we had a place together and things going on.
Whatever.
And dogs and fucking. But it's like, I knew it. But I just think that's such an interesting way, out of all the songs on the record that are so upbeat and danceable, to play this song in such a calm way. I find it just to be the juxtaposition of harsh lyrics to the fucking shitty things, to the smooth guitar. It's just fucking brilliant, and that's why this one is my favorite song on the album. Now
you made me you've won me over with that song a bit more than normal.
It's listen to it. Fucking just next time when you're driving home from the office today, or next time you're in a bad mood, or no, fuck that, dude. Put that on that fucking dope-ass record player you got, man, and fucking just smoke a J and just lay back and just have Forrest grease up his body and dance with JJ.
So a Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
All right, then we can go into This Is The One. This is a great song. This is the one that I keep texting you about. It's basically a song about delivering on your promises. I really like this one, but I want to get to this one. I Am The Resurrection, which is the most anti-religious song. It really is, for such a fun record.
It takes forever to get into it.
It does take forever to get into it.
The chorus is so good. that it's like the payoff is so good. It's it, the song's like fucking for a long time when your orgasm's better.
I am the resurrection and I am the light. I couldn't ever bring myself to hate you as I'd like, which is actually taken from the Bible. That is something that Jesus said to Judas.
Didn't know that. I always thought it was just an inspired lyric.
No, dude.
Turns out they wrote good lyrics.
So here you go.
2,000 years ago.
Down, down, you bring me down. I hear you knocking at my door and I can't sleep at night. And then this one is your face. It has no place. No room for you inside my house. I need to be alone. That's about him having a crucifix in this house. And he's like, I don't want you looking over my family. And it's just stone me. Why can't you see you're a no one, nowhere, washed up baby who'd look better dead? I mean, it's fucking deep. So then I got to ask this question because Ian actually had those beliefs and you are an outspoken. Well, outspoken, I don't know if I'd say that's right, but you are an atheist, right?
You're an outspoken atheist. You're either an atheist or you're not. As soon as you voice that opinion, you're allegedly outspoken. You know what I mean? I spoke it for you. Yeah.
But so how does, because I have this weird thing where I at least have to believe that there's something going on in the universe. There has to be some form of energy that controls everything. I believe that. Look,
if people want to believe that, that's fine. I don't. But I don't see how anyone can believe that if there is a God, and like we have to acknowledge now that there's other life in the universe. There's millions of planets that could produce life. That are right distance from fucking stars, from suns, that could produce life. And the idea that there's all these other planets, and if you believe in a God, that he must have produced all these other things, and then you have the audacity to think that after someone created you, then they're also looking over you and they're listening to you all day. I made a bit of Lego the other day. Don't know where the fuck it is in the house. I made it. Now I've stopped thinking about
it. What, Lego? Like Legos?
Yeah, Legos, right? But you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
There's things you've made. You've made a little bit of pottery when you're a fucking kid. You produced it. You made it. But you don't check on it every fucking day to see if it's doing well. You know? So the idea, if you want to believe that there's something created, you're fine. I don't. But then how can you have the audacity that this divine creator is now checking on you and listening to your fucking thing? And then, like, not only created you, but now from now. My parents aren't checking on me every fucking day.
Yeah, no. It's just so weird. You know, so weird to know that God would be looking at me when I was at a rave snorting ketamine, letting a dude touch my penis for a bump of free K. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, yeah. And going, Josh. Josh, what are you doing?
Stop it.
I'm very busy right now. I'm going to have to check on you.
All right, is it good, K? Yeah, you look like you're in a K-hole.
There's kids dying in Africa, but I'm concerned about this as well.
So when did that start for you? Like, when did you start
being atheist?
Yeah, when did you really miss? And I mean, I know this is a lot. This is a deeper question.
I was an agnostic from the time I was about 14.
Okay.
And then I was probably an atheist from the time I was about 19. But, you know, there wasn't like a pivotal, like a George Carlin album, and all of a sudden I listened.
So it wasn't like something happened, like a traumatic event?
No, I just didn't believe it. I just, every time I saw the news and I saw pain and all that type of stuff, and I thought, what am I meant to fucking pray to someone because I want to, there's a little bit of hardship in my life and there's kids who've got cancer. And then if you pray to the Lord, then maybe you can build it. And it's I started just believe that it was mayhem. The world was mayhem and life was mayhem.
Which I believe, it's pain. It's suffering.
I don't believe in a master plan where everything's for a reason. And, you know, I believe that's almost like, giving up on, your responsibility as a person. I'm a big believer in the human condition that we're meant to be nice to each other, and I don't believe in karma. I think this what goes around comes around theory is completely true, because, you know, what does the Beatles say? And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Yes.
And that's only because people can see when you're spreading love. And people will love you for that. And people, if you're happy to people will always be happy to you. Now, I'm not saying that I'm any fucking angel, that where people are always, you know, I'm always treating people brilliantly, and therefore they treat me brilliantly. But I do see in our world the people who seem to spread love on our planet are the people who seem to receive it as well.
You know? I believe that
but
too.
But I don't think that's this idea of karma. I don't think it's mystical. I think it's just in anything in life, you get what you give. Whether it be your career, you put more into it, you will have a bigger career, everything will be. If you have a relationship, partnership in your life, and you put a lot into that relationship will flourish and be better than other relationships where you just fucking treat each other like shit.
I believe everything you're fucking saying, dude.
Yeah.
Right on. That is perfect. That is perfect. All right. You ready to do some facts?
Mm-hmm.
Facts, facts, they're called
me facts. I have so many facts, I don't know what these facts are for.
Ba-na-na-na. Don't tell
bring
me
your facts, they don't mean anything to me. Bring me some lies and then we'll talk and then we'll see.
All right, here we go, first fact. All right.
You have the information.
Facts, 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 facts. All right. Little did we know that the Manchester music scene was strong thanks to the Roses, as well as the Happy Mondays and James, the Inspiral Carpets, and they were given the nickname Madchester. This was all given the nickname Madchester. That was coined by the Happy Mondays, the word Madchester. The scene, and this is where I'm going to get to the fact, the scene spawned a sound in fashion known as baggy. So the music is this is a hard word for me to say, amalgamation of the 60s psychedelica, funk, house, and guitar-driven rock, while the fashion is inspired by rave, hippie, football, and retro cultures. Rennie sported a bucket hat that becomes so iconic and influential that people named it the Rennie hat. Now, if you look at it then, it was pretty hip, but now, I mean, it still kind of holds up. Let me ask you a question.
This is the north of England have a weird thing going on. There's a thing called Northern Soul.
Yeah.
Which, for a bunch of white people just eating chips and fucking gravy, for whatever reason, and it didn't happen in London, during the sort of 70s, when soul music was at its peak, it was massive in America, with mostly black people, and it was massive in the north of England. It didn't reach Australia, and they call it Northern Soul. And this is a little bit where all this comes from now, where it all sort of bleeds in.
So what I wanted to ask you is, because these guys were fashion icons, and you look at that then, and you look at what it looks like now, what different scenes have you been influenced by? Now I'm talking, let's talk about fashion in particular. Like, do you have any of these moments
regret? When I was 14,
yeah,
I bought a Stussy pork pie hat because of Big Audio Dynamite.
Wait, which one was
it? Sweet Dry, you're slow. I'm again. I would do it all the same.
Situation now.
Now you got to remember, that's The Clash.
Fuck yeah, dude.
You know, what's his name? Mick Jones from The Clash?
Yeah.
In all the film clips, he wore those. And I was like, all right, well, that's what I'm doing now. I had one that had Stussy written across it.
So you used to wear this? And
yeah, I was 15, maybe 14, 15, yeah.
Did you feel confident?
I was trying to pull it off.
You were doing your plays and your musicals, trying to get that theater pussy.
Walking around in my pork pie hat.
Pork pie motherfucking hat. I mean, I can't hate on this. Well, God, I had my, like, wigger days. I had my heavy metal mullet days that I regret. I had my fucking raver pants days. The last real movement of clothing that I was obsessed with was when I was really into the Verve.
Yeah.
I used to wear turtlenecks all the time because I wanted to dress like Richard Ashcroft. All right, here we go. Next fact. A reunion they said would never happen. In 2002, John Squire stated in an interview with The Guardian that he'd rather remove his own liver with a teaspoon when asked about the possibility of a revival tour. And in 2011, Ian Brown told Clash that he'd need to be down to his last chicken dinner. Mm. Well, it happened, and we're guessing that Squire's liver remains secretly intact because they did
reunite.
Winner,
chicken dinner.
They did reunite in 2013. So let me ask you a question. Is there anything that you'd never do again that you thought you would never do and then you ended up doing again?
Something that I thought I would never go back to that I maybe swallowed some pride and went back to, maybe, or
could be swallowing pride. I mean, it could be
it could be something that, because there's things in your life where you go, I don't want to go back to that bit of my career, and then you sort of miss it, and you and I'm trying to think of like something big, because I know there's little tiny things. There's certain, like, I remember there's comedy clubs throughout my career where I was like, fuck that comedy club, I'm not playing there again because maybe they didn't treat me great when I was an open mic. And then you're like, oh, they were always cunts. And then when you become like a more popular comic, and then you're like, fuck it, I will play that club. You know what I mean? But I'll tell you one thing that you hit, like, about bitterness. So I have a friend, very good comic, and I won't say who it is. And then when he was young, the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival told him to fuck off, right? And so whenever they had the auditions or people had to go back to it or something like that, he's like, fuck it, I won't even audition for it. And that was anger that he was holding on to.
Sure.
They'd forgotten that the incident even happened.
Yeah.
So it's very often you're fighting with yourself in this world where you're like, well, that person needs to apologize. And the argument that you're having is with you and not with them anymore. They've already forgotten it or moved on. Whether it be
dude.
Like an ex-girlfriend where you're like, no, I'm still... And then you forget, like, we all grow up. We all make mistakes. And we all, you know what I mean? And so unless someone royally fucks you off in this world, it's just not worth worrying about anymore.
All right, let's go into the next one. Ian Brown had a cameo role in the 2004 Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban as a wizard magically stirring his drink while reading Stephen Hawking's...
I didn't know that either.
He's reading a Stephen Hawking's A Brief History in Time at the Leaky Cauldron. What do you have any cameos, any little things that people might miss if they didn't know you were in it?
There was a TV show called The Librarians, which is like
it's on TNT.
And TNT,
fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, and in the Christmas episode, I'm Santa Claus. I was just brought in because one of the producers was ADs, the assistant directors, was the assistant director on The Librarians was on Legit, my TV show, and he said, oh, we need like a Santa with a Cockney accent. I said, I don't have a Cockney accent, but he goes, oh, just come in. It was two lines, and I got asked that. Like that night, and I showed up in the morning and I was in a Santa outfit. And I was just like, all right, so people came and robbed us. You know what I mean? And because I got a beard on, like zero people have ever pulled this up.
So we can find it?
If you Google right now Jim Jefferies Santa Claus, you'll be able to find a picture of it.
We'll pull it up.
I'm eating like chili. I'm eating like a bowl of chili. And I do like a terrible accent. My acting's really bad, but I didn't give a fuck.
Hit me with the lines real quick.
It was like, oh, someone robbed us. Oh, this chili isn't half good, is it? Right? And it was directed by the guy from like Star Trek.
Spielberg.
No, the Next Generation.
J.J. Abrams.
The guy with the beard in Star Trek, like the Next Generation Star Trek.
Which one? Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, the dude.
He was the director. And I remember like he didn't know what the point of me was. He was like, we could have gotten an actor. And he's like, who are you? And I'm like,
I've had an HBO special.
I got shit going on. You know? Like, this wasn't like a comedy thing either.
All right, moving on. So, little did you know, they vandalized their former record label. All four members were arrested and charged after painting the office walls of FM Revolver, their former label, in retribution for reissuing their 1987 Sally Cinnamon without permission. All right.
Yeah, they did. They tried to make like a music video for it and everything.
Okay, so now my question is, what's your taste for revenge like? Do you just hold it in, or do you act on it? Or?
No, I've never been a very vengeful person. I don't. And who would I want revenge from? And what is the like? How bad revenge do you need on someone? Like how bad? Like so a girl. It's normally like someone cheats on you.
Yeah.
Right. So then what you do? And I've done this throughout my life. You shag one of their friends.
Always a shag.
Yeah. There's always that. But you go, is that really the best we have to offer?
All right. So I'm getting on from that. Another fact. Here we go. Pete Townsend of The Who gave them their first gig. The band was playing their first gig on October 23rd, 1984, opening for Pete Townsend at an anti-heroin event in London after sending him a note reading, I'm surrounded by skagheads. I want to smash them. Can you give us a show? The Stone Roses impressed onlookers, and they soon received record label offers. Is there anybody that specifically maybe gave you that first break? Like, what was you're saying the big break?
Yeah, the first break of my career. There was a comic called Gary who was a fairly popular comic in Australia, and I was still at university, and I was doing some open mic nights, and he had to do some gold mining tours, and these was crowds of like 200 people.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, why don't you come out on this trip with me and open up for me? And at that stage, that offer was too big to say
sure,
no to.
I could
but
imagine.
I remember thinking that was the first time I sort of got like sort of the idea of being on the road and doing a gig a night. You know what I mean? And so the last thing, so Gary's a lot older now, and mostly acting now in his career. Doesn't do as much stand-up, but still is in movies and stuff in Australia. And when I just went and did the Sydney Opera House 6 months ago or something, and I made sure Gary opened for me. You know?
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah.
That's fantastic. That's fucking great, dude.
Yeah, but that was the first time that someone actually sort of stuck their neck out for me, yeah. I think it's very important, like someone like Pete Townsend or something, in any business, mm-hmm. if you reach the top, you have to push the button to send the elevator back down.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So then I is besides...
Because otherwise you look like a cunt the whole time. Oh, for sure. Because you know these people get successful and they don't want anyone else to be successful, like they're saving something.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't cost much just to push that button. It doesn't take a lot of time and you just send it back down.
Completely agree. As you go up, you reach down, pull people up. Yeah. All right. So it's in 2000, it received the Greatest Album Ever Award at the NME Premier Awards show. And in 2006, the album topped the magazine's 100 Greatest British Albums Ever list.
And that gets 498 in America.
What do you really agree with that? Do you feel that this is the best British record of all time?
It's top five.
Top five?
Yeah.
What's beating it?
Well, the Beatles have to have something in there, you know.
Of course,
one of them in. And put Revolver in there somewhere. I'd put Morning Glory above it. Or no, I'd put definitely maybe above it.
I would think that if you go just with bands that are from Manchester, I don't even think the Stone Roses are the best band from Manchester.
Definitely Maybe is one of the most solid albums you'll ever listen to. Did that get in the top 500 list?
Which one?
Definitely Maybe.
Yes. And we're gonna end on this, Jim. I can't thank you enough. Here's the Where Are They Now from the Stone Roses. Written by Big Black and Beautiful producer David Ross. After rattling the UK with their self-titled debut album, the Stone Roses went on to release an album in the 1994 called Second Coming, which received mixed reviews. After this, the band organically dissolved. First, Rennie departed, then Squire, and soon Ian and Manny decided it was their time to go. Although, each continued to be prolific artistically. Squire formed the Seahorses. Meanwhile, Brown went on to release volume of albums that continued to break UK's top five charts. The band reunited for a tour in 2012 and played before Coachella crowd in 2013. They even released original music in 2016 for the first time in 20 years. Did you hear it?
I did. I need a single though.
Did you like it?
I didn't mind it.
It's not bad. All right. But they never created anything as timeless as their debut album, which begs the question... Who the fuck cares about some of the mishaps to follow so long as they got it right the first time when it all really mattered? Do you agree with that?
I do.
Fuck yeah, dude. I'm so happy to have you on here, man. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Thank you. This was so much fun. Jim Jeffries, ladies and gentlemen. Told you it was a good episode. Told you. I love that man to death. You love him too. Send him a message on social media and tell him how you enjoyed the episode. You can find Jim Jeffries on all social media at Jim Jeffries. And if you want all things Jim Jeffries, tour dates coming up, I know he's got a tour of Asia coming up, go to jimjeffries.com. I'll also be posting his mixtape track listing on all social media and on our website, and that will then be posted on all music platforms so you can get inside the mind of what Jim loves musically. Email this podcast if you want to tell me how good a job I'm doing or how shitty of a job I'm doing, or you just want to say what's up, 500podcast@gmail.com. Follow me on social media at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. That's spelled M-E-Y-E-R-S. Don't even think about fucking spelling my last name M-Y-E-R-S, because I hate you if you do that. It's Josh Adam Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S, on all social media. Tomorrow night, it's my birthday, everybody. It's my birthday. November 15th at the Roxy with Bill Burr and Jim Jeffries. Make sure you come. The goddamn Comedy Jam. If you haven't bought tickets, it's actually sold out already, so sorry about that. November 18th, me and Ryan Sickler, last week's guest. We talked about B.B. King live at Cook County Jail. Ryan and I will be at The Famous in Baltimore, Maryland, doing a special second night of our originally just one show on the 17th. We added another date on November 18th because we sold out the first one. It's going to be fantastic. Ryan is headlining. He's got a new CD coming out called Get a Hold of Yourself. It's an incredible hour special, so it's a big party in Baltimore to celebrate the release of his album. Pre-order it, order it, just get Ryan Sickler's new record.
And all tickets to all or any of my shows are going to be at my website, joshadammeyers.com. Last name spelled M-E-Y-E-R-S. And you can follow every little stitch and inch of news that the 500 Podcast has by going to our website, the500podcast.com. That'll show you all the locations to subscribe on your favorite platform. And please subscribe, rate, and review. I love you. I love you. I love you. Now, we just listened to the Stone Roses from 1989. Now, here's an artist that is directly influenced by this album. From Melbourne, Australia, sometimes they say Melbourne, Australia, we have the Rolling Blackouts' Coastal Fever, and this is their new song, Talking Straight, off their new release, Hope Downs. I love this song. I love this band. It's super old school. You can definitely hear how the Stone Roses influenced them. And if you are in a band and were directly influenced by one of these albums or artists that we're playing, I want your music to be featured on the 500. So please send your song to 500podcast@gmail.com. Make sure you put the album and the artist that was influenced in the subjects. And if we like the song, we will play it at the end and hopefully launch your career into the stratosphere. And hopefully one day you'll always look back and say, you know, the biggest break we ever got was on that podcast that was run by a guy that looked like Billy Bob Thornton during his Gone in 60 Seconds period. Fuck yeah, dude. Well, that's the end of this podcast, guys. Don't forget, next week is the White Stripes 2001 release, White Blood Cells, coming in at number 497. So you guys got some homework to do. Listen to the White Stripes, share the podcast, and thank you so much for tuning in. See you next week.
Guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions.
18 plus.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.
Next Chapter Podcasts.